thank you all for honoring that request to do Pennies from Heaven. I made that request because that's very much on topic today, as is my opening story, as always. And this time it's a story about a minister who officiated at the service. And when the service was over, he went to the back of the church for the reception line, kind of what we do here, off to the side. And as he's greeting people, this family approached. It was a mother, a father, and a little boy. And as he's talking to the parents, he feels a tug on his sleeve. And he looks down, and there's the little boy, and the little boy is holding a dollar. And the little boy says to him, "Here, this is for you." And the minister is kind of taken aback, but he says, "Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. But why are you giving me a dollar?" And the little boy just shrugged a bit and said, "I just wanted you to have, because my dad says that you are the poorest preacher he ever heard." Today we launch a new series. It's centered around the principles that are outlined in the book, The Energy of Money, by Maria Nemeth. And that's why we sang Pennies from Heaven today. And that's why all of you, when you came in, should have been given one of these cards with a bright, shiny penny on it. Did anybody not get this so that the ushers can bring one to you? Okay. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what this card is about at the end of my talk today. But our topic for today is the hero's purpose. You might say, well, what does all this have to do with money or prosperity or abundance? And it is related, and we're going to get into it a little bit. But I just want to make a comment, because whenever you start to talk about money in any setting, and particularly in a church setting, you know, that air of uneasiness kind of wants to drift into the room, and all of the oxygen wants to leave the room, because we all have this little guard at the base of our brain that wakes up and says, wait a minute, be very, very careful. I bet he's going to hit you up and try to get you to give more dollars. And I openly admit that at the end of the series, if the ministry here were to realize more contributions or greater contributions, that would really be very wonderful, but that's really not the scope of this series. The focus of this series is on prosperity and developing a sense of abundance and developing a sense of prosperity in our lives. And so I have to issue another warning with that before we're through, this might be something that actually is a bit more intimidating than if I were just to get up here and say, hey, let's cough up a few extra dollars this week. We all want more money in our lives, right? And if we could just find that magic bottle that contained a genie or win the lottery, it would be absolutely wonderful. But unfortunately, it's just not the way life has a tendency to play out. And so for the realization of greater prosperity, there's work involved. And it's something that before this series is through, it might be more painful for you than going and get root canal work done. I remember back when I was in school and I took a class on finance, and the professor said something very simple. People are funny about money. And it's something that really is true. Just to give you some examples of what I'm talking about, I belong to a tennis group, and every night when we're finished playing tennis, we go off and share a pizza together. And we do what boys do. We sit at the table, eat pizza, and we trade insults all night long. And every once in a while, one of them will hit home, and somebody will get really riled up, and and things get pretty heated. But the remarkable thing is, when we go home for the night, it's all gone. It's all dissipated. It's all forgotten. And there's nothing that has a lingering effect. But every once in a while, when the check comes, it will be judged that somebody really didn't contribute as much as he should have for what he ate and drank. And when this happens, it is something that is remembered and talked about for months. If you have ever been involved in a situation in which you were either a borrower or a lender in a relationship, you could probably think back to that time, and in either role, you could identify with the uneasiness that was involved in the whole situation. I remember when I was a very young boy, could not have been much more than 10 or 11 years old, I loaned $2 to my aunt, my mother's sister. Well, good old Aunt Betty has long ago made her transition, has gone off to heaven, or whatever place it is that aunts go when they don't repay their debts. But isn't it weird? 50 years ago, and it's still in my memory bank. It's still something that frankly tickles me a bit. And it's also very true, of course, that money is the cause of so many broken relationships. It is, in fact, still the single most contributing factor to divorce, at least in our country. So over the next few weeks, we will be trying to improve our prosperity consciousness. And developing a prosperity consciousness involves a bit of work. Unfortunately, it's not just about sitting our butts on the beach and waiting for our ship to come in. And we may come to discover that what we have to do is actually go out and work the sails in order to steer that vessel into the proper dock, and then, of course, keep our fingers crossed that there's not a dock strike when it finally happens. And this is why today's topic is the hero's purpose, because it involves a hero's journey, and any hero's journey requires work. It's work that requires preparation, readiness, risk, and always contains that element that there simply are no guarantees in life. Joseph Campbell, in talking about money, said, "Money is congealed energy." Well, what exactly is that supposed to mean? I think what he was trying to say is that money is the conduit for energy that is very important to us. Money solidifies energy, perhaps in the same way that a kiss or a hug might solidify love in our relationships. And this is really very important, because if it really is true what we tend to say here in Unity, that we are spiritual beings having a very human experience, then we need those things in our lives that are tangible. Those things in our lives that allow us to relate to energy, allow us to relate to spirit in a very real, a very concrete, a very touchy-feel way. So what does a hero's journey look like? Well, it's an oversimplified version, but, you know, we could say that a hero's journey consists of an individual being called to go and rescue the damsel in distress who is imprisoned in a tower that is guarded by a fiery dragon. Would that it would be so simple. Would that it would be so easy. But the truth of the matter is that the hero's purpose, the hero's journey, is something that's way, way more complicated than that. The hero's journey consists of roadblocks, bumps in the road, challenges, all kinds of dangers and risks. And so the would-be hero would have to be somebody who was willing to put to use all of his or her inherent spiritual gifts, as well as take advantage of anything that is found along the path on the way that could be put to good use. And the hero would have to come equipped with an arsenal of weaponry. Weapons such as vision, commitment, courage, steadfastness, passion, compassion, love, and my personal favorite, humility. And generally, the hero seeks out a mentor, because the hero understands the importance of learning and growing in wisdom. It's the composite of these things, seasoned with a powerful, loving heart and a right, proper intention, that determines the amount of success that the hero has in fulfilling his or her purpose. We all are on a hero's journey. After what I've described, you might say, you know, Reverend Mike, you're really right. This prosperity consciousness thing sounds a little bit hairy. I think I'll pass. I think I'll sit this one out. Well, the bad news is that you can't. Because we are all on this journey, and it's a journey that for all of us begins in the very ordinary world. In your world and in my world. It's that safe place that we all long for, that safe place that we all cling to. It's that place that we do our best to try to reside and remain deep within our own comfort zones. But again, the reality of life says, nice try. So if we take this back to the realm of money in which we're talking about, what happens? Well, the first of the month, that mortgage or that rent is always due. And every month those utility bills roll in. And every week we have to be concerned about having enough money to put food on the table for ourselves and for our family. And these things in life absolutely demand, insist upon us that we do have some sort of a consciousness about money, some sort of a relationship with money, regardless of whether we don't have much of it or we are somebody that is really loaded. This is why we have this love-hate relationship with money. We really can't live without it. And yet, on the other hand, it is our very discomfort with money that allows us to form a relationship with it that can be very fulfilling. Money fertilizes possibilities. Earlier, I shared a Joseph Campbell quote with you in which I said that money is congealed energy, but I held back the other part of it, which reads, and releasing it releases life's possibilities. I don't know if you're familiar with the TV show Shark Tank. It's one of my personal favorites. And if you're not familiar with it, what it is that there's a panel of billionaires, generally five, sometimes six, that sit there, and people come in and they make presentations to these sharks, to these billionaires. And they present their ideas, they present their products that they've developed, they present their inventions or their service notions. And really what they are presenting are their dreams. And they're seeking financial backing for them to help improve the chances and have those dreams come closer to realizing fruition. And sometimes they get offers from one or more of the sharks, and sometimes they go away seemingly empty-handed. All of the sharks say, I'm out. I'm not interested. And that's when the show is the most fascinating to me, because they come out and the contestants issue a brief statement that even though they were disappointed where they are, their frame of mind at that point. And almost always the people get turned down say, they kind of blew it. They didn't really get the message. And so they regard this not as the end and the defeat and the destruction of their dreams, but just one more challenge that they could use to learn from and to go on from there. Money stirs up emotions within us. And yes, sometimes those emotions are based in worries and they're based in fears, but they get the juices flowing and can help to move us out of our comfort zone into a better place. Money issues, money problems can serve as that call to adventure. An adventure that places us right smack dab on our hero's journey and in pursuit of our true hero's purpose. And it's really important to know and to understand that poverty and prosperity are not functions of how many dollars we do or don't have. Poverty and prosperity are states of mind. And where we fall on that spectrum between those two things, again, is related to our bank accounts as much as it is to the amount and type of energy that we invest in the whole prosperity and abundance process. So if we attach a negative energy, let's go back to that simple hero's journey story that I told earlier. If we attach negative energy to that, what it means is that the dragon will never be defeated, and the fair damsel will always remain imprisoned in the tower. And if we misuse the energy that is available to us as it relates to money, what it really means is having a life of abundance or having a life of prosperity is always going to be something that we're chasing, but it always seems to be just out of reach for one reason or another. All thoughts are prayers. And we certainly use our thoughts to gauge what type of energy we use and how much we want to infuse into a situation. So if we pray that prayer from that negative energy perspective, what else could we possibly expect but for the circumstances of our life to align themselves with that reality? And I quickly want to be a little bit careful here, because it's really easy to fall into the trap of being guilty of metaphysical malpractice. And what I mean by this, you can't judge a situation based on somebody who might be enduring financial struggles or somebody who seemingly just does not have a lot of money. That is something that he or she has brought upon themselves in a situation. Just the same way that you can't say that somebody who is fighting a health issue is somebody who brought this upon himself or herself. You just don't know all of the circumstances involved. And somebody who is really struggling might absolutely be very much on this path of the hero's journey and trying to fulfill the hero's purpose as it relates to financial matters. All that we are saying here is that there are aspects involved in the journey that can be very much related to the wealth, to the comfort that we enjoy in life. So what are some of these aspects? Well, we've already mentioned some of them, things like courage, things like love, things like compassion, things like understanding, and things like humility. And so just to take the connection a little bit further, it's important for us to understand that these positive attributes, these positive qualities, and all other positive qualities stem from one very place, and that is the very ground of our being. And so it is important that we remember to introduce our Christ awareness, our Christ consciousness into every situation, into every relationship, including our relationship with money. It is not enough just to remember that we are inherently spiritual beings. It's important for us to embrace that we ourselves are immersed in pure energy. And that we are really an important part of that one power, that one presence, that one energy active in the universe and in our lives. To the extent that we can manage to do this, even when it comes to matters of money, we feel this sense, we become aware of this power of interconnectedness. It brings with it an inherent wisdom of knowing how to use the energy around us so that we can begin to realize and better financial results and be more comfortable in life. It doesn't mean ignoring challenges. It means learning from them. Back when I was in the business world, I would travel to Mexico all of the time. And one time I met this family, the Navarro family. And it was an extended family, two brothers, middle-aged brothers, and a middle-aged sister. And I was just amazed and kind of overwhelmed with their wealth. These people always dressed to the nines. They drove the fanciest cars. They ate at the finest restaurants. And they were incredibly loving and embracing. And obviously had incredible values that were part and parcel of who they were. And so I then later had dinner with the fellow who introduced me to that family for business purposes, and I was commenting to him how remarkable I thought that these people were. And he said, "You don't know the whole story, do you?" And I said, "What story?" And he said, "Already in their lifetimes, on three separate occasions, they have been financially wiped out due to government change and regulations, or this mishap, or that mishap, or whatever. And in every single instance, they came back and they rebuilt their prosperity. They continued to tap into abundance. They knew the secret of how to use energy in ways that are progressive, in ways that enlighten us, in ways that allow us to move forward. So sooner or later, we all get this call to embark upon this journey. Maybe it's something we see, maybe it's something we hear, maybe it's something we're forced to experience when things just really go bad and catastrophe sets in. The most important power that we could exercise at that moment in which we feel, see, hear that call is the power to be willing. It's the power to say yes to whatever is around the corner waiting to greet us, despite the doubts, fears, worries, and everything else that our paranoid brain is trying to feed into the equation. It's about welcoming the next encounter. To be willing is to be open and to actually maybe become enthusiastic, eager, anxious to greet the next unknown in our life. If you have a dog and the doorbell rings, in most cases, that dog is barking its head off, growling and snarling at the door, saying, "I don't know who you are, but you better be careful." Well, I will share with you that if the doorbell were to ring at 2 o'clock in the morning at my house, my dog Rocky would get up from his bed and hightail it, running to the front door, wagging his tail 100 miles an hour. Because Rocky thinks whenever somebody comes to the door, that somebody is there to meet him and to spend time with him and to be with him in that situation. This is the receptiveness of life to life in all that life brings with it, including the stuff that occasionally just isn't so pretty. From that point, it's about your intentions and your integrity to honoring those intentions. I'll share with you a quote from George Bernard Shaw. "This is the true joy of life, being used," love that term, "being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one, being a force of nature instead of complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy." In other words, it's about formulating and holding intentions that are consistent with the very ground of your being, and then acting in ways that are in alignment with that reality of who and what you are. We could spend a lot of time and energy living in a dimension of what we pretend we are. But when we do that, we become counterfeiters. We attach an energy to money that is fake, and the currency that we try to use in life isn't real. And so it's inevitable that it's just a matter of time before that catches up to us. But to the extent that we could begin to align our consciousness with who and what we truly are, it's at that point that we no longer need all of that pretend stuff. All of that pretend stuff can just disappear, can just go away. We opened this talk, and I asked you about the card that was distributed to everybody. And this is a symbolic move on our part. And you could take that penny, and you could take that card, and you could do absolutely anything that you may wish to it. You could detach a penny from the card and you could put it in a small change basket that comes around later today. Okay? If you could find a machine somewhere that still honors it, you could buy yourself a gumball. Yeah, gumballs are a quarter, but they also did get bigger. You could take this home and put it someplace in a prominent place that reminds you to pray the affirmation that is on that card along with the penny. In other words, you can choose to use that as something to solidify your intentions as you go along your own journey. Or you could just say cute, but it's only a penny, and just toss it aside somewhere. My invitation to you is some way, find a way to recirculate it. And it doesn't have to actually involve detaching the penny from the card and putting it into circulation someplace. You can recirculate this penny by developing that attitude that I am willing, ready, open, and available to be used to embark upon this hero's journey and fulfill my particular hero's purpose. And all God's children say, amen.